Welcome to episode 56 of the MCS Real Sports Podcast. I am your host, as always, Matt Skura, and we got my fantastic co-host, Mr. Caleb Connick. Caleb, how are you this fine Wednesday, July 28th?
I'm good, man. Can't complain. It's a blessed day, blessed week. You feel me? It's a great summer. How you doing, bro? How's your summer been? All the way from Texas, am I right? Houston. Dallas, Houston, Texas. Y'all got too many fucking names for y'all state.
Yeah, we do. We definitely do. It's Austin.
Oh, Austin. Okay.
Near Austin. And so far the summer has been great. You know, been enjoying the time off, and you know, that's that. And while we're on that, let's move on to some of our sports topics that we'll be diving into this episode. This episode, in the NFL side of things, we'll be discussing the Michael Thomas injury update, what that means for the New Orleans Saints, whether it's going to derail their season or just be a little fork in the road. Yeah. And the most recent Aaron Rodgers news. That's right. He's back, reported to camp yesterday, which means now the quest for Lombardi number 5 for Green Bay has begun. And then we will also talk about some NBA news that went down. As maybe you guys may know, the finals have started and concluded. We will discuss that. And we will also be discussing the NBA draft, which I believe takes place tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken, Caleb.
Tomorrow, it's a new generation of young athletes getting into the league. I love to see it. Even last year, it was dear to my heart, and even the year before that. But last year too, it was a great thing to see, because all those guys were people that I was playing basketball with, as far as being a senior when we were both seniors, and now their lives changed that quick. For like LaMelo Ball, Onyeka Okongwu. I'm sure we got some more local guys that got in the league. Another local guy that's a top 3 pick is Evan Mobley, who is from California as well. So we love to see that, man. If any of y'all are listening to this, LaMelo, Evan Mobley, Onyeka, you feel me, man? We proud of y'all. Keep representing for the city and the state, you feel me? And yeah, it's a great thing to see. The draft is tomorrow.
Definitely going to be looking forward to that. And we'll even discuss, you know, some NBA free agency that went down, some recent trades that have happened, some free agency signings that have went down. Overall, going to be an excited episode to talk about. But before we get into those topics, Caleb, for the listeners of this episode, where can they find all the great things that you do?
Man, they can find me on the gram at 1 Caleb Connant, 1 CalebConant. Find me on Twitter at Caleb Connant 2, CalebConant 2. Link in the bio. A whole lot of other things there too. And for my business people out there, for my people that, you feel me, really doing it, my link tree is in there too. I mean, my link tree is my link in the bio. But my LinkedIn is there too. So, yeah. Check me out. I'm everywhere. Where can they find you at, bro?
Alrighty. Well, you can find my Instagram, Matt_Skura20. And with that link in the bio, that gives you access to where this podcast is available. And it's available everywhere, my friends.
Are we available on iHeartRadio?
Yes, we are. We're available on iHeartRadio. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, even Google Podcasts, you name it. We're available everywhere. And how do you access that? Just click the link in my Instagram bio. It pulls up the link tree, and it gives you the access to every link that this podcast is available under. And yes, you could also check out my Twitter, Matt_Skura, and it has that same exact link in the bio. So you could access this, whether you want to watch this episode that's being released or our previous episodes. It's available there, and we are ready to enjoy this episode 56. Let's first get into the NFL side of things. Let's kind of discuss the Michael Thomas injury. Caleb, as you may know, the Michael Thomas injury has resurfaced, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's on his ankle, and he's gotten surgery on it, and it's been projected that he will miss, if I'm not mistaken, the first 6 weeks of the NFL season. And Caleb, if you're the Saints, so far in the offseason, you have a new gauntlet at quarterback. Since Drew Brees retired, it's either going to be Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill. And now you're dealt with the blow of potentially not even having Michael Thomas the first 6 weeks of the NFL season. And if you're the Saints, how do you kind of move forward with that, knowing that your number one receiver is hurt? And even some people may even consider him, and if you don't consider him, you might be on drugs, a top five receiver in this league, and he's going to be out the first 6 weeks of the season. How, if you're the Saints, do you play well this season, knowing that you won't have your top receiver the first 6 weeks of the season?
Gotcha. First, I want to say something about Michael Thomas being a top five receiver in this league. I got to talk to Ocho Cinco, though. Bruh, Michael Thomas needs to have a higher rating than Julio. Julio, yes, is a better overall receiver, has had the better career, but he's getting a little older. Let's keep MT in that top five, at least Madden ratings conversation. You feel me? But when we talk about the Saints, Matt Thomas, and our quarterback, it's a test, I believe. And I think it's a pretty damn good test that we need in order to figure out what direction we need to go. If Winston is a solid quarterback, he's revamped himself, learned from Drew Brees, he should be able to win a couple games with the receiving core that we have and then bring his game to a whole nother level when you have somebody like Michael Thomas, because he's just a target you can't miss. So I think if Winston can complete that job, then hey, maybe we dig deeper into the season and we figure out if Winston's our quarterback or not. If Winston can't even do that in the first 6-7 weeks without Michael Thomas, then we explore how the offense would look with Taysom Hill and how we could integrate Michael Thomas into that offense. That's the only thing that I think is holding Taysom Hill back. You can't throw the deep ball with him. And as we've seen 2 years ago, we've seen the Niners, quick team, boom, short pass, run. They could have won the Super Bowl off of a deep pass, but he fucking overthrew it. Mm-hmm. So the deep pass is a very important weapon to have, and that's one of these quarterbacks we have to figure out who could do it. If Jameson can do it, I'm sure he's going to stick with the with being quarterback. If we could be successful being a short pass, long run team, hey, hopefully. But you know, you got to have a really good line for that. So it's a test, in other words. And I just want to see how the Saints respond to it. If they would get a couple, we'll just dig deeper with Winston.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely for certain. And Caleb, you make a great point on the Madden NFL receivers. For those of you guys that do not know, EA Madden just recently released their top 10 receiver ratings in the NFL, and they have Adams at number one, 99 overall, the only 99 overall receiver, followed by DeAndre Hopkins and Tyreek Hill, both at 98. And then they have Stephon Diggs, number four, at 97, which I feel like is very well deserving. He's finally getting the respect that he deserves. So good on Stephon Diggs. But the main series of concern that Caleb was talking about was Julio Jones was rated number five at 95 overall, and Michael Thomas was at number six at 94 overall. So that was the little controversy here. Madden has him just outside of the top five at number six. I honestly believe when Michael Thomas is fully healthy, he will be top five. So I would not be surprised if by season's end, even though Thomas missed the first six games, he can have those top five number stats. So yeah, we'll see how that progresses. And also Keenan Allen at number seven with a 93 overall. Cooper number eight as a 92 overall. Mike Evans at number nine with a 91 overall, and Allen Robinson at number 10 90 overall. Caleb, when you see that top 10 rankings, besides Michael Thomas being outside of the top five, which was surprising to you, is there any other surprising factors? Maybe a player finally getting the love that they deserve, or maybe a player getting a little too much love?
Nah, man, you know what? I agree with the list. I think, like, if you do in non-order, that is the top 10 receivers in the league without order. You feel me? Obviously, Devontae Adams is number one, and I truly believe that. I think he's the best receiver in the league. He showed it last year. And another thing was, how is his stats going to be with Jordan Love this year? But wink, wink, who did they get back?
They got my boy Aaron Rodgers back.
they got Rodgers back. So with that being said, I think, you know, Adams is going to stay there, if not have a great season again. But to me, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. I just think the guy who got a little less love was MT. But he's injury prone, and we see that. You know, he wasn't healthy for our playoffs, right? He was playing on one leg. He really wasn't healthy at the end of the season, and now he's had that surgery. He's going to be out another 6-7 weeks. So when we do get him back, we hope we get him, you know, as healthy as he was when he was having damn near MVP seasons. So we don't have to worry about his health. Our next observation is finding a quarterback. But is there anybody on that list that you feel like got snubbed, or is there anybody on that list that you feel should be on that list? Because I think there's somebody that should be on that list, but he has to prove himself one more time.
You know, I actually like the list. I looked at the top 10 list, and I feel like it's a top 10 list that makes sense. I look at it, and I don't really see anything wrong with it. I will say, on the front, I would say the top five is pretty much makes the most sense, besides Thomas and Julio. But we've seen, like, when Julio Jones is healthy, he is that top five guy. So I honestly believe, from a top 10 receiver standpoint, Madden just pretty much hit it on the money. Like, I love that they put Allen Robinson at number 10, because I feel like he's finally getting the little recognition that he deserves. Yes, he may be on the Bears. Yes, their quarterback situation, they have not had good quarterbacks while he's been on the team, but he's been putting up great numbers as a receiver. So I'm glad they put him at number 10. And overall, I just think it makes sense. Like what you mentioned earlier, Caleb, and if it weren't 1 through 10, these are the 10 best receivers in the NFL. So now, I do believe there will be some people that will get a 99 by the end. I do believe we'll see DeAndre Hopkins 99 overall by the end of the season. And maybe even a Tyreek Hill at a 99 overall at the end of the season. Because as you guys may know, for those who play Madden, there are rating adjustments throughout the season. So, for example, if Stephon Diggs is at a 97, you could possibly see him finish at the same 97, a 98, or maybe even lower at a 95. So we'll see what happens there. But I do believe they got the top 10 receivers right in Madden. I kind of want to delve into the Saints schedule. So the Saints, luckily for them, they have a bye week for week 6. But for their first six games, for their first five games of the season before their bye week, in the games that they will not have Michael Thomas, they will play the Green Bay Packers week 1, Panthers week 2, Patriots week 3, Giants week 4, and the Washington football team week 5. Caleb, if you're the New Orleans Saints, you see those first five games to start the season, no Michael Thomas. If you're Sean Payton and you say Jameis Winston is your starting quarterback to start the season, what are your expectations of record through the first 5 weeks? If you're the Saints, what's kind of your record that you should prioritize? Like, say, for example, we really need to be 2-3 or 3-2, you know, to start the season. If you're the Saints, what are your expectations? First five games without Michael Thomas, what should their record be?
I'll break it down for you. At least 2-3. Good is 3-2, and great would be at least 4-1 or 5-0. But 4-1 would be ideal. If even if they sneak 4, that'd be ideal. I think 3-2 is very attainable, though. There's two teams on that list that you could probably, you know, fight for a win with, and then those other three teams, you could throw them up in the air. But I believe in the underdog, and what they could do, what they could accomplish. So you feel me? Any given Sunday, anybody could lose. You know what I'm saying? So just sneak one of those out. Sneak one of those out. Maybe you could get in Aaron Rodgers' head to make him, you know, throw some interceptions. But one of those, if we could sneak one of those games out versus those good teams, I'm okay with that. I'm okay with being 3-2 at that point.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I agree with you as well. I look at the first 5 games of the season. I will say I think the panic button should be pressed if they are somehow either winless or only have one win through the first 5 weeks. That's when, if you're the Saints, you got to hit the panic button. Something's got to change, whether that be a quarterback switch or just the whole game plan of the offense. Like, if the Saints only have one win through the first 5 weeks, something's wrong. But I do agree with you on the front of bare minimum 2 wins. Looking at the schedule, there's no way through the first 5 games they should only have one win. Like, bare minimum is 2 wins, and that's the Panthers and the Giants. Those are, in my opinion, they're for sure 2 fire wins. Guarantee wins are the Panthers and the Giants. The other toss-ups are, in my opinion, Green Bay, New England, and Washington. The reason why I throw Washington in that mix is just because of their defense. Their defense is going to be a telltale. If the Saints could pick apart Washington's defense, the Saints are going to easily win that game, no problem. But if that Washington defense could get the pressure early, then they're going to cause the Saints some problems. So 2-3 wins, I think if you're the Saints, you look at that and say, all right, our season's still afloat. We'll be just fine. Mm-hmm. But anything more than 2-3 wins, like you mentioned, Caleb, if the Saints are somehow 4-1 or even 5-0, the first five games without Michael Thomas, then this team is just going to get a whole lot better. And it will further show that the Saints are a well-coached team. If they can, without their top receiver and with Drew Brees retiring, be 4-1 or even 5-0, that'll just further ensure that, hey, Sean Payton doesn't need Drew Brees to be a great coach. He's already a great coach as is.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I think for the Saints, our biggest team need is a quarterback, and we need to figure that out. And I think the Green Bay Packers have that same situation. They know who's going to be stepping in that second spot. Now it's about using Rodgers after this year to get the pieces so that guy could be successful. And we have the pieces for a quarterback to be successful. We have a top 5 receiver that is damn near number 1. We have a running back that is top 5 that could damn near go number 1 too. We have a line. We have a solid defense. You feel me? We have a good coach. So all we need is a quarterback. You feel me? That's truly all we need. So this is the year that we're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, and I will say the quarterback situation between Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. For Jameis Winston, this year his career is pretty much on the line, in my honest opinion. Because, I mean, we look at Jameis, the last time he was a starter, he had a 30-30 season. He had 33 touchdowns, which is fantastic, but he had 30 interceptions, which is not good, almost averaging 2 a game. So this is kind of this is going to be a telltale on whether or not Jameis Winston, in my opinion, could last in this league or not. Because if Jameis Winston is successful, he could be a starter in this league. But if he isn't successful, if he reverts back to 30 for 30 form, he's pretty much going to be a career-long backup quarterback for the rest of his career. So a lot is on the line here for Jameis Winston. Now, I personally
I like that. That's a hot take. I like that.
Now,
He's in the hot seat, and I agree.
He is in the hot seat, and I kind of want to throw this last question before we move on to the Aaron Rodgers news. Caleb, if you're Sean Payton, week one, you have to choose between Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston to be your starting quarterback. If you're Sean Payton, Caleb, who are you going to have start week one against the Green Bay Packers at home in New Orleans?
Man, you know what? I'm going to give you an honest answer as if I was Sean Payton and what I would do. I would do a mix of quarterbacks. Like, okay, maybe the first quarter, first three possessions, I'm throwing Winston in there. Then next two possessions, I'm throwing Taysom Hill in there. And then I'm going back to four possessions, and then I'm mixing it up just because that they're two different quarterbacks. It's like Lamar Jackson and Ben Roethlisberger on the same team. So, therefore, the defense is going to have to change the way they run their defense. You feel me? They got to, you know, watch Taysom because he could run. But then again, you don't have to watch Winston like that because he could throw. So I would try to do a mix of quarterbacks in one game, honestly, and try to do it, like, stick to it. But if I couldn't do that, I would probably start off with Winston. I probably would. I would start off with Winston. We gotta win. Winston's in the hot seat, bro. We gotta give him a chance. After those 5 weeks, though, you could don't be surprised if you see Taysom, because Taysom can very well be the guy, and I think he's gonna get that time to prove himself as well. If Winston doesn't prove himself, I think Taysom Hill will definitely have that time.
You are definitely 100% correct. I agree with you as well. In my opinion, if I were Sean Payton, week one, I would start out with Jameis Winston and have Taysom Hill be kind of the gadget guy like he was when Brees was a guy. Because a lot of people forget when Drew Brees was a starter, Taysom Hill was kind of the gadget guy. You would see him line up as tight end. You would see him line up as a receiver, running back. And even if they did like a wildcat plays, you would see Taysom Hill line up in that slot. I think Sean Payton's going to utilize Taysom Hill to that. But one thing I will say is I think they'll probably limit Taysom Hill on that, because on the depth chart, if I'm not mistaken, he is the number two quarterback. So they're probably going to protect him more, because if Jameis goes down, Taysom Hill is that next guy. And I'm pretty sure Sean Payton, as a head coach, does not want to see his number two quarterback line up as a tight end, get rocked, and then knocked out for the whole game. And then if Winston goes down, you got to have a random guy at quarterback number three. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Sean utilizes Taysom Hill. I still believe he'll be the gadget guy, but week one, I'm going with Jameis Winston. But you are correct, Caleb. If the Saints do struggle, or if Jameis has a bad game, I expect Sean Payton to throw in Taysom Hill right away. So I personally think Jameis has a short leash. And by that, I mean one of those to where if he has a bad game, if he has a touchdown, three picks, Sean Payton probably gives him a warning like, hey, if you don't step up your game, we're gonna bench you. And if that next game he has the same start, you know, no touchdowns, three picks, the plug is gonna be pulled and Taysom Hill will be thrown in right away. So Jameis Winston, start out fast, start out good, and you'll be the guy week one. And even potentially the future, if you could do well the first five games.
Yeah, for real, though. For real. I agree.
And with that being stated, let's move on to the main topic of discussion, the Aaron Rodgers news. All offseason, ever since the draft, there have been many reports. Rodgers isn't happy at Green Bay. Rodgers wants out. Aaron Rodgers wants to be traded. All that talk in the offseason. Everybody's saying Rodgers is gone. Rodgers is going to Denver. Rodgers is going to be in jeopardy. Rodgers this, Rodgers that. Well, Roger that, back to camp. Because on Tuesday, Mr. Aaron Rodgers arrived to Green Bay, Wisconsin in training camp and is ready to perform. And I, as a Green Bay Packers fan, cannot be more excited than that happening. So I'll kind of throw it out to you, Caleb. Right. Obviously, you know my stance on this. I'm excited that he's back. I'm glad that he is. I kind of want to hear what you have to say, Caleb. Through all of the offseason drama, all the stuff that went down from the report on draft day all the way up to this point, are you surprised that he made it reported there on the first day yesterday on Tuesday?
Like you said, I'm just happy as can be. I'm not even a Packers fan. And I was happy just to see that he was going to come back because I honestly, I think the Packers have a good enough team with him on the team to at least go to the Super Bowl and almost win. And I think they could have did that last year, but I think this year they have the team for it. They do. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to see Rodgers back there at least one more year with Adams, and I'm glad they got the deal done. Now, I mean, they got one more run. It's like the last chance, or what is it? The last dance. It's really the last dance. It's the last dance and the last chance, you feel me, for the Green Bay Packers and Aaron Rodgers to make it right. So, I mean, like I said, I'm not a Packers fan, but I was happy to see that he's back. And I guess you could, I could say I was surprised at the same time. Surprised at the same time, but I'm glad something got done. I think that's amazing. I think that's amazing. I love that something got done. How do you feel knowing that he's back for one more year, but he might leave next year? How do you feel about that?
You know, I feel good that he's back another year, because I honestly believe going into the season, if Rodgers didn't play, I didn't think Love was ready. I think if you give Jordan Love another season behind the bench, another season to learn the system. Now in the depth chart, he's QB2. He's not no QB3. He's going to actually have to suit up now that Jordan Love is a QB2. And I honestly want to hold out and wait till preseason. I want to wait and see on August 14th when the Packers play the Texans preseason. I want to see how the kid looks. I want to see the kind of potential Jordan Love has. Because if Jordan Love looks good in preseason, I think he's going to be an excited quarterback. But if he struggles in the preseason, then it's kind of going to be a little shaky. Like, okay, kid, you're going to be our starting QB next year. You may need to pick it up a little bit, please. We're trying to at least be a playoff contender. But overall, I'm excited. I kind of had a feeling that this was his last season as a Packer anyways, just because of all the stuff that went down during the offseason and with them drafting Jordan Love as well. I kind of had a feeling like this year could be the final year. And they also restructured Rodgers' contract to where after this season, he could either opt out and be a free agent or request a trade as well. And there was also another move that the Packers made that went down. That boy Randall Cobb is coming back to Green Bay.
Yes, sir.
The Packers, now it hasn't been final, but there's been news have been swirling around that the Texans will be trading former Packers receiver Randall Cobb to Green Bay. Now they will still have to figure out who goes what, but it's pretty much in the next probably couple of days, you'll see the details of the trade that's going to be going down. But Randall Cobb is going to be back in Green Bay with Davante Adams, with Devin Funchess, with MVS, Alan Lazard, that nice receiving core. And I'm just excited to see. You know, I'm excited that Randall Cobb is back. I believe it's going to be fantastic for the Packers because it gives Rodgers another weapon that he's familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, none of that, all right, MVS, let's see if you can make the catch maybe. Okay, Alan Lazard, let's see what you got. No, this is the guy. He's been with Rodgers 7-8 years. They know exactly like tic-tac-toe. Like, all right, Devontae, you do that. You do your thing. All right, Cobb, be a little slot guy. You know the drill.
Yeah, you and know, I'm just, they're just impressing him. They're impressing Rodgers, in my opinion, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I definitely believe they are impressing Aaron Rodgers. I believe they're finally giving him the stuff that he needs. And I can't wait for this season because I've been honestly, you know, in the football chat, you know, I've always been hearing, oh, without Rodgers' team, nothing. 6-win team. they're going to be trash without Rodgers. Well, Rodgers is back, baby. And I'm here to tell you, the Packers are coming. I know Tampa got their team back together. I know San Francisco's back and healthy. But those green and gold cheeseheads in Green Bay, Wisconsin, they're going to be coming with some force, especially with how Rodgers is looking in the offseason. He's looking good. He's healthy. He came off the MVP season last year. He's got his boy Cobb back. He's back with the team. Still got Davante Adams, top two receiver in the NFL, not number two, the man in the NFL, the number one receiver, and I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear nobody say Hopkins number one. I don't want to hear nobody say Thomas number one or Tyreek Hill. Is Davante Adams the best receiver in football?
Talk your shit, man.
So I'm just excited that Rodgers is back. I don't care that it's for one more year. I'm going to enjoy every game that he plays. If this is his final season in Green Bay, I hope it's capped off with the ring. But I also will not be surprised if we lose another NFC Championship game, because that's what we do best. So I wouldn't be surprised with either or.
Perfect way to love and diss your team at the same time.
I personally hope, it's going to be very hard. It's going to be very hard to win a Super Bowl, because you look at Tampa is back to full form. They literally brought back the starting 22 of last year that won it all. San Francisco is going to be great. The Rams made good moves as well. Cardinals made great moves. You know, you even got the Seahawks as well. And even the NFC East, Washington's defense is a team not to slouch on. Even the Dallas Cowboys, what can go wrong will go wrong. But Dak is back. He got his money. Finally, in the new offensive system, gets to learn well. You know, no COVID offseason, so all the team is with each other. You know, it's going to be hard to make it to the Super Bowl. But one thing is for certain, you will see a Green Bay Packers home playoff game, because we're going to run through the NFC North. All the chatter in the NFC North thinking, oh, this is going to be Chicago. Oh, it's going to be Minnesota. All silent, baby, because Rodgers is back and the NFC North is going to be scorched.
Yeah, that part. Hey, we'll see what they do. It's going to be a very, very entertaining season for not only the Saints, but the Packers as well. That I can guarantee.
I also want to throw in one last little thing before we move on to the NBA stuff that's went down. Regarding the New Orleans Saints, there is a new name stadium for the Saints. In fact, it is no longer, as of 2 days ago, called the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It is now rebranded because Caesars bought the naming rights to the stadium. It is now rebranded as a Caesars Superdome. Caleb, what are your thoughts on that? The Mercedes-Benz contract, it expired, and it is now rebranded like the Caesars Palace in Las Vegas, the name brand Caesars, buying the Superdome, and is now renamed Caesars Superdome. How do you feel?
I don't like it. I definitely like Mercedes-Benz Superdome. Sounds way better. Caesars, the spot in Vegas, don't know if I ever been there, but I'm glad that it's a hotel, a more upper echelon place, because it sounds too close to Little Caesars. I thought that they bought the Superdome for a minute. Little Caesars Superdome. But nah, man. I honestly like the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It just sounds better. We're a Mercedes-Benz type of franchise. We're a Mercedes-Benz type of team, you know? So I like Mercedes-Benz, but Caesar is just too close to Little Caesars. It's too close to Little Caesars. Oh man.
I could understand on that front. I personally, it's kind of an end of an era, because you look at Mercedes-Benz Superdome. That name has been on the Saints for a long time. And like you mentioned, it's easy to pronounce. Mercedes-Benz Superdome. It has a good ring to it. But you know, in the NFL, it is a business. You know, when naming rights expire, if they don't renew it, something's got to change. And turns out Caesars decided to buy it up. And, you know, you're going to hear Caesars Superdome for the next 20 years.
Get used to it.
Yep, you'll get used to it. I will say, though, it doesn't have the same ring. You know, Mercedes-Benz Superdome and then just Caesars Superdome. But we'll see what happens there. It's going to be interesting. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when the Chargers moved to from San Diego to Los Angeles, it kind of took a little bit to not say San Diego, to say Los Angeles Chargers. But now, you know, we'll see how long it takes. You know, instead of calling it Mercedes-Benz Superdome, call it Caesars Superdome, or maybe they'll just say the Super of Dome.
Yeah, Super Caesar Dome. I like that. The Super Caesar Dome.
There you go. we should call up the Saints and say, hey, I got a new brain. I got a new brand for you. The Super Caesars Dome.
Sounds better than Caesars Superdome, but hey, get used to it, youngins. I grew up with the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, so I'm going to stick with that.
All right. And with that being stated, let's move on to the NBA side of things. As many of you guys may know, the NBA Finals have started and concluded. And it is concluded with my prediction. As many of you guys may know, previous episode, yes, it was released on July 8th, nearly 3 weeks ago. At that time, the Suns were up 1-0, and it was game two. And I stated for the Bucks to win the game in the series, their side pieces had to step up. They did not step up in that game two. So that take did not age well. They were down 0-2. Many people thought the series was over. It was going to be Suns in four, Suns in five, Suns in six. Mm-hmm. And as Caleb mentioned, Suns in seven. You were going to see Chris Paul win that ring that he so desperately deserved. But the series changed once it went to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Because the Milwaukee Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, he just went on a feast. He went beast mode, as many people would call it. And the Milwaukee Bucks, they had one of the most interesting captions on Instagram I have ever seen. After Giannis had a fantastic performance, I believe in game three or four, they said freaks come out at night. Which many people interpret that very differently. But I will say he played fantastic. And as you guys know, what went down, the Bucks tied up the series in Milwaukee 2-2. As the Bucks and Giannis Antetokounmpo, they won those two games. But what separated it? Some of you may ask, why did the Bucks win the next four straight? Well, I think the Bucks listened to my take. Because I said for the Bucks to win, they needed Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday to step up. And what happened?
They stepped up.
You saw game three in Milwaukee. Drew Holiday stepped up big time. What happens in game four? Chris Middleton drops 40 points in game four to tie up the series. And what happens in game five in Phoenix? The Bucks are down 16 after the first quarter. I got a text from one guy saying, it's over for the Bucks. It's done. They're down 16. It's a wrap. Bye-bye, Bucks. But I said to him, this is just the first quarter. You got plenty of game left. And what happens? The Bucks come back. They go up after halftime. And the Bucks go up double digits in the game as well. But then here come, as many people would say, here come the Suns. Devin Booker. Chris Paul, they start hitting shots, right?
Right.
But the Bucks were letting them back in. Giannis was missing free throws. Middleton was missing free throws. And it all came down to this play. Suns down one. Devin Booker with the ball. Under 30 seconds left. Perfectly what you want for the Suns, right?
Right.
Perfect opportunity for the Suns to take the lead. Take a win, go up 3-2, heading back to Milwaukee. But what happens? One of the main pieces I told to step up, Drew Holiday, brings up one of the biggest steals of his career. He goes up from behind, snatches the ball from Booker, and it's all full steam ahead. Drew throws a perfect lob to Giannis, slams it home, and won. The Bucks won game five. And as many of you guys may know, what happens at game six. We saw possibly one of the greatest closeout games in NBA postseason history. Because Giannis dropped not 49, not 51, a 50-piece to seal the deal on my prediction. The Bucks and six win the NBA Finals, and they bring home their first championship since 1971. And I'll throw it out to you, Caleb. Seeing the Bucks win that series in six games, how do you kind of feel? Because I know you are a diehard Chris Paul fan. You told me this yesterday. You said Chris Paul was your idol, modeled your game after him, looking up to him. It took him 16 years to make it to the NBA Finals. He gets there and falls two games short of a championship. How badly does that hurt, one, for the Suns, especially since they were up 2-0, and two, for Chris Paul?
Well, for CP, the story alone, I think the story alone is just, I mean, you can't go wrong with that, you know? It shows you, and as long as you keep working, your goal, you can get to it. He literally, what, 2-3 years ago, he went from Houston to OKC and then to the Suns. And once he was at OKC, they thought it was over. Like, oh, he's just going to mentor guys for the rest of his career, and we'll see after that. Nah, he got to the Suns, was able to play with a guy like Devin Booker and Ayton, and really make the most of their run. Do I think that they can make it back again if he runs it back? I don't know. I'm not too quite sure. So that's the only only disadvantage the Suns have, you know, and they could offer him more money. But if they offer him more money, they can't get more help. You feel me? So I think the Suns are at a disadvantage with that part. Another option they have open is a sign and trade. And I think the fans are really tied in with CP. I think Devin Booker and Ayton have a strong connection with CP. And obviously Monty Williams has a strong connection with CP. So I think the team would just want him back to run it back one more time, even though I think it's in the air when we speak about them being able to win it all or go to the finals again. But I think the Suns' best option is a sign and trade, man. I think they can get the most for a sign and trade. And they let CP go where he has to go. Wow, that's just my opinion. What do you feel the Suns should do?
Well, I've heard some reports that Chris Paul said he wants to come back to Phoenix. So I've heard some of that. But the thing with Chris Paul is he got a $44 million player option. If I'm Chris Paul, I'm looking at it. I'm saying I'm 36 years old, entering on 37. Should I risk it and think that I could get $40 million a year? Hell no. If I'm Chris Paul, I would accept the team option. I'm just like, hey, $44 million is $44 million. I'm 36 going near 37. I'm not a $44 million point guard. I'll just take that. Or maybe he'll look at it and say, if I do want to return to Phoenix, maybe if I take a pay cut, less money, help bring back the same team that we had last year and run it back. Because in my personal opinion, if the Phoenix Suns can somehow run it back with this same exact team over an 82-game season, I feel like they do have a chance to get a top three in the Western Conference. I mean, we saw last year they were a two seed.
It don't matter what seed you are in the West, though. That's the thing. It don't matter what seed you are. You could be number seven. Lakers, number seven. Number eight. Yeah, we were number seven.
But if the Suns could bring back that same team, they have a very good chance to be in the upper echelon of the Western Conference. But we'll see what will happen with the Phoenix Suns. They have a lot to worry about in the offseason, mainly relying on Chris Paul. And if I'm the Phoenix Suns, I would do everything you can to bring back Chris Paul. Because you look at this team without Chris Paul, they were at the bottom of the barrel. I mean, they were lucky that they made the bubble last year, because they were near the bottom seed. in the West, I mean, yeah, they clicked. They won 8 straight games in the bubble. But you kind of looked at, you know, before that bubble even happened, they were near the bottom of the barrel on their way to finish having another bad record. And then what happens in the offseason? The only big thing that happens is, well, okay, two big things happen. You add Jay Crowder in the offseason, and you add Chris Paul. And what happens? Something instantly clicks because they go on a run. They win 50-plus games. They get a number 2 seed in the Western Conference. They dethrone the defending champs in the first round. They then beat the Denver Nuggets. Not only did they beat them, they swept them in 4, further enhancing, birthing, hashtag Suns in 4. They then beat the Los Angeles Clippers in 6. They make it to the final for the first time in 28 years.
And losers.
They weren't even alive yet when they made it to the NBA Finals. They'd even make the playoffs. They'd even make the playoffs in 11 years before this year. And it was all because of them pretty much adding Chris Paul. And then another side piece, Jay Crowder. But for the most part, because Chris Paul ran the offense, they were able to excel and do well. So if I'm the Suns, I would do everything I can to bring back Chris Paul at whatever price. Whether that's him accepting his team option or him taking a pay cut to help improve the team, that's how it's going to be. Now,
I like that idea. I like that idea. The pay cut idea is very good.
Now, on the other side of things, let's talk about the NBA champs, the Milwaukee Bucks. And I will say it is about damn time a Wisconsin sports team finally gets over the hump. Too many times I've seen my Green Bay Packers fall short. I've seen them fall short four straight championship games that they've been to. I've seen them blow it against Seattle. I've seen them get run out the building against Atlanta. And I've seen them back-to-back years fall short in the NFC championship game. I've also seen the Milwaukee Brewers lose in the NLCS to the Dodgers in a game 7. And I've also seen them blow a wild card game. And I've also, if anybody's a Wisconsin Badgers sports fan, they've blown a lot of games as well. So the Bucks, before they won the title, they had some bad meltdowns. I've seen the Bucks blow a 2-0 conference finals lead against the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard. And then just the embarrassment that happened to them last year against Miami. They didn't just get beat by Miami. They got embarrassed. It was embarrassing how they lost them in 5 games last year. And a lot of people wanted Budenholzer gone after that. A lot of people wanted Budenholzer gone after that Heat series, which they got embarrassed in 5 games. And they got lucky they didn't get swept. But what happens this year? Things changed. Because the Milwaukee Bucks are NBA champs. And you kind of had a feeling that they could really win the championship, in my honest opinion, when they came back in that Brooklyn Nets series. Because obviously, as we know, they swept the Heat, no-brainer. But the main series that people were looking at were the Brooklyn Nets and the Milwaukee Bucks. And for the Milwaukee Bucks to win the chip, people were going to say, you got to go through hard teams. Brooklyn Nets, they were that hard team.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good. It wasn't pretty. They fell down 0-2 in that second game, man. It was ugly. I believe they lost by 39 points in game 2. It was ugly. It was bad.
But the Milwaukee Bucks showed that if you just persevere, you keep punching, you overcome adversity, and no matter who's on that opposite team, you could do it. Like, the Milwaukee Bucks story is like perfect, because that damn near happens to every good player. You could even go back from all the way, but trace it back to Charles Barkley. You feel me? Great player, but couldn't ever win. You got Utah Jazz. They were even went to the finals and lost. Fucking bunch of guys. Allen Iverson went to the finals, lost. Great player. Isaiah Thomas, he actually won, but no. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of guys who didn't get those rings. And yeah, I honestly could have seen Giannis like, damn, if he stays in Milwaukee, which I could respect a lot, if he stays in Milwaukee, he might not ever get a ring there. Like, I really could see that. But the fact that he went through every trials and tribulation, from getting beat by LeBron to Kawhi coming in there and throwing a dagger, and to last year when he could have been on the throne and that still didn't pan out how they thought it would be, to this year, KD being healthy and still overcoming that and being able to win. So the way Giannis did it, I mean, even if he retires with this just one ring, it speaks volumes. It speaks volumes. But he's going to have to go get some more. So, hey, if he wants to be the greatest of all time, he got to go get some more.
He definitely will. And with that train rolling around, you know, that's what I call the championship train rolling. And that's kind of what went rolling. And I kind of knew the Bucks had a good chance when they beat the Nets in seven games. They were down 0-2. They rallied back and tied the series at 2. They were down 3-2 heading back to Milwaukee game 6. They get the job done. They force a game 7. And they rally and win game 7 in Brooklyn. When they won that series and you saw the Hawks upset Philadelphia, that's when you kind of had a feeling, okay, this Bucks team could really make it to the finals. And they most certainly did. They got past the Hawks in 6 games. But the biggest scare was that Giannis injury in game 4. That was the biggest scare I've ever seen, because I thought we lost Giannis for the rest of the playoffs. And then next thing you know, we see him game 1 of the NBA Finals. Not only have limited minutes, they throw him in there 35 minutes. And he has a decent game. And ever since that, he just took off. They were down 0-2, like I mentioned earlier. They could have easily given up, easily fallen in the series. They could have went down 0-3, could have gone down 3-1. This series looked to be over.
It did.
But Giannis and the Bucks flipped the switch. They rally off. They win 4 straight games. And I think that's so important that the Bucks won, because it shows that you don't have to go to a super team to win a championship. Yes, if you don't, you go through hard times. The Bucks and Chris Middleton. They suffered through thick and thin, ups and downs. They were together for 8 years. Took them a long time. They finally got over the hump. They finally got the right coach, finally got the right team. And they seem to pull through. And if I'm Zion Williamson, I take notes, because AD, first year he lives in New Orleans, wins a championship. Jrue Holiday, first year he leaves New Orleans, wins a championship. Zion, you better take notes, my friend. If you want to win a championship, you get out of New Orleans first year, you got a pretty damn good success rate.
Hey, I think Zion, just to comment on that, I think Zion could get it done in New Orleans. Why not be the first guy to do it? He was the only top. We could say he was the number one pick. Chris Paul wasn't a number one pick for New Orleans, but for New Orleans, out of him and AD, he's definitely came into a better situation than AD. You know, you have Brandon Ingram as your side piece. You really just need one more guy or two more guys. It's kind of like, yeah, I would love to see Chris Paul go back to the Pelicans and run it back. Zion, Chris Paul, B.I., that would be different.
That would be very different. And it would be very interesting to see what happens there if Chris Paul returns back to New Orleans, where it all started.
Yeah.
Cap off his career there.
With Zion, I mean, you got a high flyer, dominant piece with Zion. You got somebody real similar to Booker in B.I. And then Chris Paul, he's magic himself. So that would be amazing. But Zion, be the first one to do it. You know, all the Pelicans really need is a solid point guard. Keep their picks. Let's move to the draft. You know, we got the draft tomorrow.
Yes, we most certainly do. And that is a smooth topic to transition into. Let's move on to said draft that takes place tomorrow. Caleb, looking at the draft, will there be any real surprises in the draft? Because in my personal opinion, I don't think there'll be a lot of surprises. I think it'll be a no-brainer, Cade Cunningham at number one. But there's been a lot of circulation as of late of the number two overall pick. Mm-hmm. As you guys may know, I believe in our previous episode, we kind of discussed the top five teams. We said Evan Mobley at number two to Houston. But there's been a lot of rumors going around of the Houston Rockets maybe even taking Jalen Green.
I like that.
At number two. And Caleb, if you're the Houston Rockets, should you really take Jalen Green at number two when you have John Wall, Kevin Porter already, and you have one of the best center prospects in Evan Mobley? Or do you just simply go, we'll just go with the best available guy. We like what we see out of Jalen Green, and we're just going to go with that route.
If they feel Green is the best available guy, they should go with him just because they could polish him. They're going to have him for a lot longer. Kevin Porter's a baller. Baller. Bro could ball. Get you 40, 50. I believe he could ball. But can you trust him to be reliable and to, you know, act right and not have to go through any issues? I don't know. John Wall has a big contract, so this is probably our last year seeing Wall in Houston, unless he's down to re-up for a lesser contract. So I think they're going to need somebody at guard eventually. Why not go get the best guard, the second best guard, or the best shooting guard in the draft? He is a great, great talent as far as being able to get the mid-range bucket, you feel me, and athletic. He reminds me of like a DeMar DeRozan type of guy. But him with Christian Wood could be a good little mix. And also, I mean, I don't think Mobley would be a bad decision at number two neither. Mobley and Christian Wood could be very, very scary just because they're so, like, lethal. They could play inside, out, shoot the three, dribble, you feel me? Everything you want from a big man, they got it, besides the defense. But Mobley is a defensive guy. So I don't know. I think Green is a good choice. I think Mobley is a good choice. You can't go wrong with either of those two guys. How do you feel about what the Rockets got going on at number two?
I feel like it's very interesting. In my personal opinion, I don't think you can go wrong with either or. If the Rockets personally believe that Jalen Green is the man, then by all means go for it. I would personally go for more of a team need. I would personally go for more of the center position just because Rockets, they need a big man, and why not fulfill that by getting the best center in the draft in Evan Mobley? But it has also been proven and shown that, you know, shooting guards, they could last longer. They could last longer in the league because you could transition them from a shooting guard or have him be a point guard, you know, have him dribble up. So you could do a lot more with the shooting guard than a point guard, which is understandably so.
Yeah.
But if I'm the Houston Rockets, Jalen Green better live up to what he's projected to be, because it would be devastating for the Rockets if Jalen Green doesn't live up to the hype and you just see Evan Mobley flourish. Because the Rockets would be looking at that and saying, man, we could have had Evan Mobley at number two. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I personally believe the Rockets can't go wrong with either or, you know, Jalen Green or Evan Mobley. I'd prefer for them to go with Mobley because they already have, you know, a shooting guard or a point guard. But if they're not buying Kevin Porter, or maybe if they are to trade John Wall at the trade deadline, you know, this upcoming season, then, you know, you could look at Jalen Green as saying, hey, we're going to mold Jalen Green into our future point guard / shooting guard. You know, he has John Wall to learn from, mentor from, and just kind of go from there. You know, I could see that going that way as well. And, you know, I personally can't wait to see what the Houston Rockets can do, because they could go multiple ways. You could go your team need in center with Mobley, or you could go with, or you can maybe even go with your future franchise guy and Jalen Green. You can't go wrong with either or. So man, if you're the Houston Rockets, man, you just look at it from the front of what kind of way, because the Rockets are going into rebuild. It's how do you want your rebuild to go? Do you want it to be like a Hakeem Olajuwon one where you center it off of him? Or do you want it to be off a James Harden approach, more of a shooting guard kind of guy? So if you're Houston, We'll see what happens. They could go the Hakeem Olajuwon approach where they draft the top center in the draft and build from there. Or they could go the James Harden approach where they get Harden, you know, a shooting guard, and they just try and build off of him and his philosophy. So Houston, you got a lot of options. Just make sure you pick the right one.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Make sure you pick that right one. Make sure you pick that right guy. Pick him. Another pick that I want to ask you about is that Memphis Grizzlies pick, my boy.
Ooh, and that's actually a good thing to bring up on, because this trade actually went down yesterday. So yeah. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Memphis Grizzlies made a trade. Uh-huh. The Grizzlies traded Jonas Valanciunas, the 17th pick, and the 51st pick to the New Orleans Pelicans for, and the Grizzlies received Steven Adams, Eric Bledsoe, the 10th pick, the 40th pick, and a 2022 protected first round pick via the Lakers. And I want to start off by saying I think this is a win-win for both sides. I mean, you look at if you're Memphis, you get two solid veterans to help build upon your playoff appearance that you just made. You move up in the draft from 17 to 10 and from 51 to 40. And on top of that, you get another first-round pick. So that's a win on that front. But if you're the Pelicans, it's also a win for you because you still keep a first-round pick. You just move from 10 to 17. And you get the 51st pick, even though you move down from 40 to 41. But the difference is you finally get your veteran center in Jonas Valanciunas, who can almost do it all. I mean, you can see him pull up a little bit, you know, kind of see what happens. But overall,
I think he's a better option than Adams right now for that team.
Oh, yes. For that team, he is definitely the better option. And I feel like Jonas Valanciunas could definitely help Jackson Hayes. You know, I feel like he could help Jackson Hayes develop more than Steven Adams could. Because Steven Adams, he's kind of like an old school center. More of a guy, he could put some points, get blocks, get rebounds. Can't really shoot that well. Valanciunas, he could shoot well a little bit. And, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, Memphis, and talk about the Memphis pick, them moving up to 10, I feel like that's huge for them. Because they now have a top 10 pick to where they could get another guy that could be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you look at, they could get, you know, it's projected that, you know, they get a guy, Josh Giddey from overseas in Australia. You know, them getting the 10th pick at small forward. So, you know, maybe they could go with that route, or maybe if they don't like Jaren Jackson Jr., maybe they could even use that 10th pick to bring in a veteran. I mean, you look at the Grizzlies, they got a lot of options. They just made the playoffs. They just made the playoffs this year. Yeah. And it's gonna be exciting to see what Memphis does, because they could go a lot of options. And I personally love that they got Adams and Bledsoe. They got two veteran pieces there. Bledsoe won't be playing there. Is it because of the recent reports of a Bledsoe buyout and he could possibly go to Philadelphia?
Possibly go to the Lakers? But I didn't hear that it was – I mean, I'm sure it's going to be a buyout. That's going to be what's going to happen in order for him not to play. But he's not playing. Like, that's – already under terms, he won't be the backup point guard for the Grizzlies, and I was excited with seeing that. I think what do you think is their team need? What position do they need to draft at 10? Because 10, I don't know what you, I mean, what do you think?
Man, I personally think the team need pretty much for Memphis is, I would say, either a shooting guard or a small forward. Because you look at, they're set at point guard with Ja. You're set at power forward with Jaren Jackson Jr. or Brandon Clark. And then you now have your center in Steven Adams. So, I mean, I pretty much, at the 10th pick, since you now have 10, I would honestly just look at it and see, you know, who the best shooting guard or small forward available is. You know, that's personally what I would do if I were Memphis. I would just look and see who is, because the thing at 10 is when you have the 10th pick, you kind of miss out on the main lottery guys. You miss out on the Cade Cunninghams, the Evan Mobleys, the Jalen Greens, the Jalen Suggs. You kind of miss out on those.
Right.
But you could still get, you know, those sleepers at 10 to where like they have the talent, but they're just not quite top five talent. So you can still get something, get a good player there. I just personally think it's either going to be a shooting guard or a small forward. Whether it's the top small forward prospect or shooting guard. If I'm Memphis, I go with either one of those.
I feel that. I would agree. Either a shooting guard who has a jumper like Davion Mitchell, or I would get a backup point guard, but then at 10, getting a backup point guard, you would hope to find a starting point guard that you draft in the top 10. So that's probably unlikely, but I would go with a shooting guard for sure. If I was the Grizzlies, I would definitely look for like a shooting guard or small forward, maybe even try to get that pick and trade up and get into the top four, because I think those were the guy, the high guys are at, you know. And I mean, if they can get like a Jay Green, that'd be perfect.
Man, if Memphis could find a way to trade up and get Jalen Green, you pair him up with Ja Morant, that'll be one of the scariest duos in the near future. Now, I personally don't think it will happen. I think they're too far out of it. I mean, because I feel like if they were to trade up, you know, they would have to most likely trade up with the Rockets to get number two. And I feel like for them to get the number two overall pick, they'd have to give up a lot. Like, the Rockets will probably have to tell them, hey, take on that John Wall contract. We'll give you the number two overall pick. But you got to give us the young guys. You got to give us a Jaren Jackson. You got to give us Brandon Clark, maybe even Dylan Brooks. You got to give us that. You got to give us the 10th pick. So yeah. One thing I will say is, if the Grizzlies are willing to move up the top two and sacrifice some of your young pieces, go for it. If you're willing to sacrifice, go for it. But if you don't want to sacrifice, stay at 10. And if you're Memphis, if I'm Memphis, I would say just stay where you're at, because you look into my opinion, if you're Memphis, you don't want to speed up the process too early. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you look at the West. It's a powerful conference. We got our Lakers. Obviously, as you guys know, we recently won a championship last year. Before the Bucks won it this year, Lakers won a championship last year. You also got the Phoenix Suns, who just made it to the NBA Finals. You also got the Clippers. You got the Jazz. You got the Nuggets. And you got Golden State coming back with Steph and Klay. And they got the number 7th pick, which they could most likely use on trade piece. That right there is 6-7 teams. And there's only 8 teams that can make the playoffs. So if I'm Memphis, just keep the rebuild going. Just keep the process going. You're exceeding expectations, which is great. And what is also great, and I will close out this episode by saying this. The one last thing to conclude episode 56 is the NBA is bringing back the play-in tournament. The same play-in tournament you saw this year, 7-8, 9-10. What play-in tournament is back for another season. And I think if I'm Memphis, just keep it there. Just keep in that play-in tournament and kind of see what happens. And I'll throw that same thing to you, Caleb, to close out this episode. With the NBA play-in tournament returning for another season, does that add another element of excitement, or is that another one of those why? Or is it another one of those like why?
Listen, I'm excited. Can't lie. I'm definitely excited for it. Just because, you know, you can't take it. It prevents a lot of tanking, and teams that want to, you know, make that run, it's a lot more possible for teams that are in that 10-9 seed. And it happens to a lot of teams, like the Kings. It happens to them way too much, to be honest. Happens to them way too much, and it gives them a chance to shock somebody, make the playoffs, and make a run. Anybody can make it to the finals, as we've seen the past couple of years. So I'm excited for it. I must say, I like the move.
Mm-hmm. I do. I personally love the move as well. I feel like I was a little hesitant at first. So I was just like, why are we doing this again? But it adds a lot of excitement because you could be the seventh seed and you could fall out of the playoff. Like you would think that you'd be a guaranteed lock at the seventh seed, but if you fall out, you know, if you lose two straight, you're out of the playoffs. So yeah. We'll see what happens there. I will say it gives teams like Memphis and New Orleans a shot at making the playoffs. So we'll see how that goes from there. And overall, this is going to be an exciting draft that will take place tomorrow. It will be an excited NBA offseason. And with training camp starting around the NFL, season around the corner soon, I believe the football countdown is nearing, you know, just above 40 plus days until football season starts. So going to be very excited on that front. And, you know, before we conclude this episode, once again, Caleb, for the viewers that are listening to this episode, where can they find all the great stuff that you do?
You can find me on Instagram at 1CalebConant, 1CalebConant. You can find me on Twitter at CalebConant2, CalebConant2. Click the link in the bio. You can find a bunch of other things too. Jules and Jim's podcast dropping every Thursday. So that'll be dropping tomorrow, as well as MCS World Sports podcast dropping today. Make sure y'all check this out and watch the draft tomorrow. That's where they can find me. Where can they find you at?
Well, they could find me, Matt_Scorer20, on Instagram. Link in the bio gives you all of the links to where this podcast is available. And it's available everywhere. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, you name it, it's there. And on Twitter, Matt_Scorer, same link in the bio, same availability everywhere. We appreciate you guys listening to this episode. This is Matt Scorer. My great co-host, Caleb Conant. We are signing off for episode 56.
We out. You dig that.